Welcome to Authenticate This, the cybersecurity leadership podcast for CISOs and identity leaders navigating the complex world of identity. From real-life breaches to internal missteps and everything in between, we bring you authentic stories, hard-earned lessons, and actionable insights to help you lead with confidence when chaos strikes. Our goal is to humanize identity, uncover actionable solutions, and explore the business of identity beyond the spreadsheet. This is Authenticate This, where identity meets leadership.
Hey, welcome to our podcast. We're our hosts, Tim and Aaron. I'm Aaron. We've brought a friend of a friend to the podcast as a guest today, who's rapidly becoming a first friend, Corey Kimming. He's our Senior Director of Security at Valvoline, performing all the duties and responsibilities of the CISO there. Talking to this intermediary friend, he's a big time emerging leader. He's very focused on growing a team and loves his team, which really matches what we want to do on this podcast around humanizing identity. We've already got a lot of just in our little banter, got good stories from the guy. He also does a lot for his community. He's the co-chairman of the Detroit chapter of the Collaborative Cyber Alliance, which I got to go to the Chicago chapter last year, and it was a great time. So if you ever get a chance to go to one of those events, you'll learn a lot and meet a lot of great people. And one of those, if you get to go, is our guy, Corey. Corey, so did you get a chance to listen to our first podcast? Any notes or advice in the recording the second one of what we should change?
Thanks, Aaron. Yeah, that first podcast, honestly, I was highly impressed with for how smooth it went overall. Being a guy that loves listening to podcasts, especially on long drives and in the morning, it was good. It was lengthwise overall, real well, kept me engaged. I think the cool part was Tim's story, your guys' story around the tsunami. Not your typical day at the golf course, being a golfer myself. I'm not sure which reaction I would have. I think I'm a little bit of Aaron using the data, but also trying to be level-headed throughout it as well, being realistic and calm. But that's easy sitting here in Ohio, not on the coast there.
Yeah, that actually kind of segues into, right? We're going to dig in and talk about all of the amazing things you're doing with your organizations and with your communities and go through some of your background. But I'm glad you brought that tsunami up, because the types of people that you are going to influence and deal with kind of fall into those three buckets, right? The three buckets we've talked about are apathy, fear-based, and logic-based. And it's kind of very broad, but that's really, if we want to lump people into those buckets, those are kind of the three that we influence the most. But, you know, the jarring thing about that event was the alarm that went off when the sirens went off, and kind of we didn't know what to do. And today's Valentine's Day, and the last time we had sirens go off was a couple of weeks ago. We were at Disney World. I was with Aaron. We were doing a corporate event, and Aaron and his wife, Blake, took us and my family to a restaurant called Beaches and Cream. And little did I know that they had the ultimate dessert. So to tee the story up, this morning, my little girl, she's 8 years old. And I said, Mila, what would you like for Valentine's Day? And she goes, Dad, will I get any dessert I want? I go, yeah, of course. She goes, I want the kitchen sink. And so my thoughts go back to the kitchen sink, what this dinner was, what this dessert was. And so I committed to her tonight. I'm going to make the kitchen sink. I found the ingredients. I'm going half. Okay. Cutting this in half, listen to this. Half cup of fudge, half cup of butterscotch, half cup of peanut butter, 2 bananas, 2 cupcakes, angel food cake, 18 scoops of ice cream, coffee, chocolate, strawberry, marshmallow cream. And it goes down and down. There's like 40 ingredients. And so, Aaron, thank you for giving my kids pre-diabetes and also setting the bar way, way, way too high for desserts. So thanks for that. Being that it's Valentine's Day, you guys have any, before we jump in on the real part of this podcast, any funny Valentine's Day stories, anything that happened, you know, in your history, in your past that you want to share?
For me, it's from a Valentine's Day perspective. The past, pretty normal this year. So typically, as my wife calls it, it's a Hallmark holiday, right? So we're more, hey, we don't do gifts for the kids. But 2 days ago, she's like, yeah, I got you something as well. So as typical husband here, I'm getting on Amazon and panicking and then going on, and hopefully she can't hear me, but getting a gift card for somewhere. So I made it, but it was, luckily I have Prime on my side, so I was able to get that one day or same day shipping, but we'll see how she reacts.
Yeah, blame it on the ice storms. So let the Prime delivery vehicle show up instead of going out to buy it. So love that. Well, Yeah, let's get into it, Corey. I really am excited about our first pre-calls, kind of going over your background and history. And you align directly to the type of identity leader that we want to bring on this call, right? Like, you have the certs and the education and all the history and background, but the reason you're so effective within your organizations is because you're focused on community and you're focused on your people first and humanizing identity. So thank you for joining us. We love that you're here. I want to dig into the first question. So if you had a superpower, let's say a superhero power, if you could pick one, what would it be? And then let's pivot to what is your actual personal superpower?
So my superpower, so if I didn't have a choice on this one. So my son, who's seven a couple years ago, was into like PJ Masks, if anybody's familiar with that, where there's different powers on the characters. He made me fire, right? So I had the fire superpower. He was wind. Our daughter was earth. And this goes pretty well. My wife was water. So for me, it relates in a sense because I'm always putting out fire. So at least now I get to flip the script and be the fire. But as a wife does to a husband a lot, she's putting my fire out and kind of keeping me level-headed. So that always, it's entertaining because we always kind of battle which one would win in the overall elements fight, right, on that. And I think fire's got a pretty good chance, but it's tough to be water.
Ooh, I'm on the earth. I'm on the earth team. I think earth wins.
It sounds like you're trying to make up for that late gift on Valentine's Day for your wife.
I agree.
All right. What's your superpower? What's your actual superpower?
So my actual superpower is, it's for me, over time, I've always been one to listen, right? And I've been in a lot of organizations where I get in, you get people that want to be the center of attention. I'm a very humble person. So I kind of come, as they say, 2 ears, one mouth, right? And so my big piece that I will bring to a lot of discussions is listen first, talk second. And I say that to my kids as well, but being able to kind of read the room, understand where people are coming from, showing that empathy as well, and just let them talk. I mean, we're all knowledgeable in what we do. We all have pride in what we do. And for me, it's listen, think about it. I'm not always one to just react quickly. If you know me, I look like I never change my expressions, which I think works well for this role at times. But I think it's just really being that, I would say, balanced leader at this point, and really just allowing people to show their worth and respect that worth promoted as well.
I love that. So allowing people to show their worth, that is a superpower, right? That is an absolute superpower. So was that a learned skill? Was that something that you were taught? Was it natural?
If you talk to my parents, especially my mom, she's still amazed that I do what I do as I sit here today. But I think it came natural. I was always a quiet individual, especially through school, through high school. I was more that quiet, funny guy that would just speak up once in a while and say something dumb and make you laugh and then go back to the corner of the room and kind of hang out again, right? But what I've learned is to kind of, I would say, embrace that a little bit more. And also I really put a lot on making sure that I am at the top of my game from a health perspective, from a mental side of things. And one thing that drives that too is I've learned over time, and this is through training, is just bringing my whole self to a conversation, right? When I show up to work, be me. I can't fault myself for doing something wrong or doing something right in a sense, as long as I'm showing up and being honest. I do have a funny story about that. As I was going through premarital counseling as a requirement, to where wife and I, they do a test to where they look at, how do you look at things overall, right? What's your perspective on life? And typical, it comes back around that 50 to 70 range from a scale. That means the glass is a little foggy, right? Everything's hunky-dory, good to go, which is normal. I came back at a 7. And that meant that I look at everything clear, right? It's wow. Clear and honest and it's direct. And at first, like, oh, this is bad. And the pastor was like, no, this is actually really good because you are transparent and very honest with what you do. And that's how I lead my teams. I'm heavy on transparency and honesty as well.
Absolutely love that. Did you have a mentor or someone early in your career who helped you and kind of develop some of these skills?
I think for me, from a mentorship perspective, it was collective, right? And so I spent a lot of my career really at two locations. I worked for a university as a young adult out of college there doing telecommunications work. And work with individuals that have been there 25, 30 years, right? And so for them and for me, it showed dedication to the job, right? I also grew up in a household where my dad retired as a construction worker, carpenter from the union. And so the dedication, the hard work or mentorship, not only from my parents, but also from being entry level into the organization. The second part of my career, majority of it was through a manufacturing company where I had multiple, I would say, leaders and mentors, to where they really taught me to details matter, expressions matter. Again, kind of coming to the table prepared. So one thing that I've learned over time is, especially in this role, every meeting is a different meeting, right? You're, as a CISO, you are, one day you'd have a day where you're talking about 10 different subjects, right? In 30 minute conversations. And some people can do it. They can come to the table and be ready to go and be prepared and be able to bounce around. For me, I've learned that balance of do the prep work, do your research. And what mentors have really taught me is, again, coming to the table prepared, details do matter, as well as just on that end, respecting each other and showing that empathy. And some of that was where they did do that, and some of it where it wasn't, right? I've had leaders that were maybe did it a way that I don't agree with, and I've gone the other way. And I think you take that negative in your own eyes and turn it into a positive, or as I say a lot of, is opportunities.
That could be a superpower as well, right? Being able to absorb the negative, not let it affect the way you work, and then focus on the positive. That is awesome. Love that. I sense a lot of passion here. Clearly, the passion is going towards taking care of the people, taking care of your coworkers and all the people that you interact with on a day-to-day basis. Where does that passion come from?
I think it's just ingrained. You know, I, as a techie, so grew up doing the Cisco work in high school through tech prep and then through college and just being that computer guy, right? At a point in my career, I shifted to say, let me see what I can do for leadership. And I'm pretty personable with people overall. I'm an introvert like a lot of us are, right? But I've learned and put myself into positions to at least establish those necessary relationships. And part of that is through how I grew up, right? Being involved in things, being part of the community, being in sports was another one as well, right? And that drives a lot of how I build my teams. But for me, it really was more around, I would say, again, just where I came from and really what opportunities that I really had throughout my career.
Yeah, when we met earlier this week and you kind of gave us a background, right? You grew up in a small town, just a few thousand people. You were in 4-H, kind of doing farming and things. And I thought it was really cool that you got a Cisco technical certification while still in high school. That shows some extra initiative. Absolutely love that. I understand kind of how you got into tech. Was there anything that pointed you to identity or that attracted you with identity?
I think, yeah, what attracted me identity was more just how it touches everything, right? And I think we are, when you get into tech, identity is not your first thing, right? We all were working on computers or doing something within that. It's more, this thing's cool, let me build it. And even in cybersecurity, I think it's evolving where you may get some that are coming out of college and school wanting to get an identity, but it's at a point when I wasn't there, it wasn't the cool factor. The cool factor was, let me be a pen tester, right? Let me be on the red team. Let me do incident response, you know? And so what we're seeing shift though is, if you're really going to focus on growing your program and really being able to manage the business and support the business, well, security operations and engineering are key, because that sets the standards and foundations. Identity really is the one that is the business driver. Because we all know that, you know, on a day-to-day, everything we're doing is tied to who you are. And for me, it was a little bit of a choice, but it was also a little bit of a force, right? If I was going to grow my program, I have to shift it from being where all we're worried about is the cool tech to actually being more identity-centric, and then getting the right people within the team and the right support staff outside of my organization to get it there. And I, you know, you get the wins that way as well within the org when they can get onboarded quicker, when they're not having to reset their password as much or don't have a password on that end, right? When they can just do their day-to-day without even knowing security is happening behind them, I think that is key.
Identity wasn't the cool kid, but now identity is the cool kid. Is that what I'm hearing? for kids, for young
I think so.
Professionals right out of school and things?
I hope so. And I think that's still a learning thing too, right? When we talk about community and education, to me, that is something that still needs improved, is what does identity mean when it comes to cybersecurity? And it doesn't always mean it is within the cybersecurity realm, right? You see a lot of organizations that identity may live with outside of the CISO. We've talked on there's executive level identity officers now in the mix. So for me, it's, why is it cool to me? Because you're touching everything in the end. And I'm having conversations as recent as 2 hours ago, where moving people around that were doing identity to other areas of the organization, right? Or bringing people in, because it gives you so much breadth of experience, because again, it is a central kind of mirror within the organization.
Love it. So if you were to give advice to a recent grad or a young professional kind of looking to move into identity, what would you tell them to do in the first year, first 18 months?
What would I do? What would I tell somebody straight out of college? I mean, first off is to get into identity. I mean, for me, internships and co-ops are key. I had the opportunity when I was at the University of Toledo to be a student worker. And while it wasn't in the cybersecurity area, I was the guy pulling Cat 6 throughout the building in rooms or buildings that were 100 years old. That were dirty, right? Building computer labs and learning how to troubleshoot PBX systems, right? But what that got me was real world experience. And it also got me close to that server room, right? It got me in the data center to learn a little bit more about networking and get hands on and sit with the individuals that have been there for 25, 30 years. On the identity side, to me that's a tough question, because you have your roles that you can get into right away, entry level. You see a lot of individuals within my area in information and cybersecurity overall that start at like the help desk, right? Mm-hmm. The service desk. And I think that's a huge value there. It's underappreciated on their role, but it drives, if you're doing it right, you're shifting a lot of your level one, level two work down to that group, right? So where they may not even realize they're doing identity work on their day-to-day, right? They're following a SLP or a knowledge base, and they're doing a manual process, but they're also working with customers. They're working with internal resources to make sure things work, right? As simple as resetting a password is annoying to people, but hey, if you can make them, in a sense, can't say enjoy it, but be comfortable with it and build that relationship. That builds up your soft skills, as well as you learn the process of why a password needs reset, how it gets reset. And honestly, in the end, hopefully you can figure out how to automate that.
Love that.
I was just thinking through like all of this, like through 4-8, small town. We probably didn't have a lot of computer help when you were growing up, like learning and stuff. You've got to be just an avid learner on your own. Right.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that. You've probably had to teach yourself. I mean, you're a listener, right? But maybe you've had to teach yourself a lot about identity. Like, how did you actually learn these elements of identity as you got into the role you're in? Mm-hmm. Were there any like aha moments? Like, oh, this is what makes sense. I'm just thinking like, I know I've had a lot growing up in my career in identity, and it's always changing. But how do you keep attuned? How do you learn?
Yeah, it's tough. I think we're all busy, right? We're all doing our day to day. And to kind of, how do I keep myself learning is really, I kind of go back to, if I'm going to sit in this position, I need to be top of my game, which can be a struggle, to be honest, right? I mean, burnout is a thing for CISOs and really anybody within the cybersecurity industry, which includes identity, because the work never stops. If it did, there's a problem. You might want to check on something there. But growing up, didn't have that opportunity. I was given the opportunity by doing the tech prep, which was my junior and senior year. They just got me into that interest. And I wasn't much of a learner until I got into cybersecurity, right? And so I was always very detailed, knew how to worked my butt off. Hard work was where I got. A little bit of luck, a little bit of hard work got me where I was. I will say I took risk I jumped from being an architect to handling NERC-CIP compliance, if you ever heard of that, right? But what helped me on that is I was very structured. And I learned in there, like, this cybersecurity world, and identity included, that's what's next, right? That's where it's going. And so at that point, I'm like, you know what? Go back, get your master's in cybersecurity, see what works. Lucky enough, a role popped up right when I graduated, and I already proven myself. And then from there, it was like, I don't want to stop learning, right? And I realized with the role that we're in, the industry we're in, you can't stop learning because, I mean, it's ever evolving. And I think it's honestly neat. From the tech that we deal with to the evolution of processes, standards, you know, the regulatory stuff. I deal with a lot of privacy, right? Which identity is a big piece of privacy as well. And to me, it's, if you slow down, you're way behind the curve. But there's also that ability to utilize your network, part of being the co-chair in the Detroit chapter and then governing body of Ohio too for Avanza is, you know, I'm on signal channels, right? I have part of the RH ISAC where it's that Chatham House rules where you share something, you don't tell anybody. But I'll tell you, it is amazing because I got to turn my phone off sometimes, the amount of chatter that we get going on there. But the ability to just say, hey, anybody have this situation? Anybody dealing with that? Anybody heard of this product? And people care, right? Because we might be competitors in the industry, but we're not, as we said, talking through signal. Because we're all dealing with the same stuff.
Yeah, and try to stop the same things. Like, so it sounds like you're educating each other. You're a learner, you're a listener. How much education are you having to do with the business on, I mean, I'm sure all of it's security, but on identity and understanding while doing that, learning about the business so you can apply identity. Do you run into that a lot?
Yeah, for us, education into the business, leading up, leading down, educating horizontally is a tough part of the day-to-day. I mean, for one, and kind of going back to your last question, you know, I also learned from my team, right? Mm-hmm. Going back to humanizing identity, there's people that I have an individual on my team that's been doing it for 32 years. You want to talk about knowing the good and the bad, not only at the organization, but just in identity in general, right? And I had a conversation with him earlier around, hey, where do you want this to go? You're at that point where I want you to tell me, like, how do you want to finish this thing up, right? Because I remember when I interviewed and met the individual, the statement was, I want to end my reign here with an successful identity program. And that has never left my mind, right? And I'm like, but what can I do to help you? I think on top of that is just kind of, again, going back to making sure you put yourself in the right situations. You know, again, reaching out, doing the identity piece in a sense of there's a lot of education out there. There's a lot of threat intel. Gartner is a big one.
That shows great leadership, Corey, right? Like understanding what your employee needs and how to help him succeed. And you never forgot his goal, like aligning to their goals. That's the exact thing that makes great CISOs. So speaking of which, one of the hardest part of your job is influencing culture internally. And I really want to dig in on how you manage up, like when you're presenting to your board or your C-suite and you are trying to get a project pushed through, some of the tactics that you use. But more importantly, I want to understand how you manage down and out throughout your organization and influence that culture. Because as we go back to that tsunami story in the first podcast, right, you got three types of people: fear-based, logic-based, and apathetic. And that includes your leadership and everyone you work with. And so, yeah, I'm curious how you influence and maybe if you have any nuggets of value managing up and managing out and down. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, so really managing across the enterprise is really one of the bigger roles that I play as a CISO here. And, you know, every day is different, right? And so if we look at managing up and coming from a more technical background, I will say I've had to put a lot of work into this and there's still improvements to be made. And a lot of that's self-improvements by getting myself out there, doing this, right? In a sense, practicing, talking to others and selling the story and education. So a lot of it is just practice for one, practicing on my wife or even my kids. My son knows that I stop hackers, so I gotta educate what that means. But when it gets to like managing up, I mean, There you go. Right. I don't know how fire comes into that, but it works. All I know is he brags, so that's all I care. Makes me happy on that end. I'll take it. But as far as managing up, I mean, for me, I've learned, and this is part of me listening, is as I've sat in a lot of those sessions with the executives, and especially those that I don't really have a part in, I will first off take notes, right, in a sense of, I remember I sat in one a couple months ago, and our COO was talking, and he was going back and forth with the presenter. They were presenting their case and the why and all that. And I sat there and I didn't even like pay attention to what they were presenting. I was paying attention to what she was reacting to and what questions he was going to ask. Cause I knew at some point in the next couple of months, I'm going to be in the hot seat in a positive way that I need to be prepared. Again, it gets going back to being prepared. You try and predict the questions, but at least an understanding of how to read them. Is he asking to ask, or is he actually like, wait a second, I don't agree with that. And then what do they care about, right? Executives, they align, right? There's ones that CFO, I know that when I meet with her on a monthly, I have to present investments, right? I have to present savings that I'm running through or having this fiscal year or this quarter, or hey, we're going over, or hey, here's why you handle cyber insurance, why we're putting focus on that, right? Versus COO, I was just talking about, he's over operations. And so what am I doing to support that piece? And then legal, same thing. How do we manage risk and privacy and all that? So I think it's, for one, in my opinion, it's kind of studying the executives and how, what makes them tick, right? It sounds a little odd in a sense, but then it's also really relating to them and kind of going back to the tsunami thing is data drives a lot of decisions, right? Yeah. And if you have the data and you have the metrics, and you can show them that, then it's really hard to say, well, no, I don't agree with this, right? Especially if it hits the nail on the head and it improves the process.
What I'm hearing, Corey, is that you understand your audience, right? And you morph your message, data-driven message, to your audience depending on what their goals are, right? And so if you're, like you said, you're talking to the CFO, COO, you're using the same data points, but you're sharing it with their goals in mind. And so that's an absolute skill set. Mm-hmm. Managing up also works managing out and down. Now, motivating people below you, let's say motivating someone to adopt a program that you're rolling out, right? Sometimes these programs can be disruptive. They can add a step or two to our end users within our customers. Do you have an experience or some examples of how you rolled out programs and got the community to adopt?
Yeah. Well, how do I kind of support and really push change, right, is kind of what you're asking to the organization horizontally and down. So I had the opportunity to lead a 18-month divestiture just recently. So I led that from a security perspective, which you can imagine the priority or I would say importance of having good security in place as you're taking half your company and half the people and saying, hey, go over here, but we're still going to stay connected for a little bit because we got to keep the lights on. But then all things are going to start falling off here. And there's data, there's privacy, there's legal pieces involved. There's, hey, we need this open port still and connections made and the hiring piece. So for me, that was tough because I came into that brand new to the organization as well as would say just the people there. And so what I've done is first off is build that trust. I am pretty adamant on making sure that it sounds simple, but adamant on making sure I have my one-on-ones with my individuals, right? I make sure that, hey, check up on them. If something's going on personally on that side, hey, I heard your kid's sick. How's he doing? Everything okay? Take your time, all that stuff. So I think building the interpersonal relationship is key because they trust you. And then they honestly get to know you to where when you're coming across saying, hey, we need to get this done, they know I'm serious and I'm just not, in a sense, blowing smoke, right? And so that's where I think from my direct team, it's worked well where they've been, I would say, amazingly supportive of initiatives coming across. Plus, I think what's helped is I'll show myself as vulnerable at times, right? Or I will call myself out and say, hey, that was the wrong decision. Didn't mean to do that. Or what do you guys think? I'm at a loss here. I want your input, right? You guys are closer to it than me. Well, give me some ideas here and I'll let you know which one I like. Or, hey, just run with this and I got you. You just tell me what to get out of your way, then let's go. So I think from a direct team thing is building that trust, knowing that we're all in this together. Kind of goes back to playing on a team growing up, right? I was a big baseball guy. And while it's you're batting by yourself, but when you're in the field, you're relying on the pitcher and the catcher and then the fielders to throw it to first base or to catch that ball, right? So you're not typically doing something by yourself. You may have your individual contributions at times, but collectively, you're winning that game, ideally. Horizontally, so peers of mine, others in the organization, it's the why. What's the value of this? Getting real with the change. You know, I'll be honest. I think people will initially always complain about things because it takes them away from their day-to-day, and they don't like that. But over time, they'll move on. They may sound bad, but what one of them is a good balance when it comes to identity. You know, I've done this in the past, is how frequently you have to change your password as well as the character length. And so the simple thing is, well, if we're going to extend the character length and strength, then I'm going to reduce the frequency of the requirement to change the password. Right. And so they're going to be like, oh, man, I got to make this thing 16 characters. What the heck? I'm like, well, you only got to do it once a year now versus every 90 days. So they're like, wait, then you kind of look at like how many people are doing 12 to 15 already. Right. So what's that extra couple exclamation points at the end or whatever that is, right, to get it done. So I am one that comes from a balance, and it's a yes if you do this and work together and honestly be transparent with them on why it needs to be done and equate that to the overall organizational goals as best as I can and just build that relationship. And I think that's key.
I was going to add there, Corey, like that's a lot different than I've heard from a lot of other CISOs out there or when I work with them, right? A lot of it's very fear-based and direct. They're like, well, we've got to do this. It's a regulation policy. We've got to go do these things. And often that leads to CISOs who come in and out of organizations a lot and their tenure is not very long. They do get some things done, but, and I don't really have a question, but I just a comment on just how cool that is, Corey, that you've tried to understand the people that you're impacting and compromising and what's really supposed to be done versus just mandating. And I can only imagine that means people really like working with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I know it was just a comment, but thank you on that, because I, you know, at times I'm like, well, maybe I need to be more fear-based, right? But again, it's showing up being yourself. And again, that being your whole self to there. And when you show up for work, and I don't want to play that Jekyll and Hyde, right? It's not how I am when I'm home, and it's not how I'm going to be when I'm always home because I work from home. But when I step out of this room I'm in, but I think for me, yeah, and at times you have to push. People can tell, like, if you're typically here and all of a sudden you're here, they respect that. They're like, oh, wait, Corey means business. I'm going to get this done. I've had managers that are always living through fear, right? Or pushing that fear where you just like, okay, they're just going to get mad at me anyways, either way. I'm going to do it because it's my job, but am I really going to be motivated and truly supportive to the mission when they're always just trying to live by fear and push on that versus this guy really does care, really puts focus on growing me as an individual, puts the time in, right? When they see me putting the hours in and getting annoyed by things, they know I'm not working through the motions. It's truly hitting here, right?
When you align to their goals and they know it, when you push, they know you're pushing them to be better. So that's amazing. One thing I want to dig into a little bit, you mentioned one of your skill sets is having ownership or taking ownership, right? And being a little bit vulnerable. Do you have any examples or any stories around a time where you were vulnerable, maybe where you screwed up and made a terrible mistake and then resolved it and solved it, or any examples you want to share?
Yeah. And kind of goes back to the people side of thing and one of the hardest parts. So kind of back to your question on examples of being vulnerable, right? So it goes back to, as a leader, your first priority, in my opinion, is to support the people and put them in the right place to be successful. ideally within your organization. And I've always said to my team, if you go somewhere else and you go on to bigger and better things, that I'm going to be pretty pumped for you. And I've had that, and I'm still now friends with them directly because they're not reporting to me, right? And they're also people who I run things by at times because that trust is there. But for me, on being vulnerable, I've had situations, so not one directly, but from a hiring perspective, right? I always pride myself on being able to think that I can read people real quick, right? And know, are they a good fit or not? And I've made at times decisions where I think this person is the better hire than this person, right? And it's bitten me before. But what I think people appreciate is, instead of saying like, hey, I'm going to give up and this isn't going to work, it's, well, maybe they just need to be over here instead, right? Maybe I just need to give them a different opportunity because it seems like they just need motivated and this is maybe a better person to be under, right? Or, hey, have they ever thought about doing this versus identity or getting into identity because it touches everything and they like to be involved in everything, right? And also on board, I had a conversation with my team today, and this is directly pretty much what I said. We're working through updating our policies. And I just got off of 3 hard meetings, and I get in there, and they were 8 to 10 minutes into it. And I came in and started just talking and talking. I should have been listening. And I took a step back and said, hey, hold on here. I think I'm confusing you all more than I should be. You guys tell me what's going on. You're driving it. I don't mean to get in your way, and I apologize for that. And we weren't on camera, but they knew, like, hey, I truly did. Like, actually, he's like, you know, you shouldn't be. They got this. They're grown-ups. They're accountable, and they can run with it. So it happens more than you think. And I think calling yourself out once in a while it's good for you personally. It's also good for them to see it.
Yeah, it's real and it's authentic, right? And that's the best way to lead. Absolutely love that. So, Corey, you've talked a lot about your leadership skills, and I'm really impressed with the way that you manage, the way that you empathize and listen to your team. You really are humanizing identity. Now, if we get back to identity, let's take the human aspect out for a minute. What's the biggest issues that we're dealing with today, kind of in the identity landscape, from your opinion?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the biggest issues in identity, as I see it, is really there's just so many different ways of, I would say, putting it together, right? And we've talked on this, there's not much accountability on the vendors themselves. There's a lot of new vendors in here. You have partners, vendors that have been here for a very long time that are now adding more services to what they do. And when you throw in customization and this is something we're dealing with on our side, is if I talk EDR, I'm going to maybe have 1 or 2, right? My protection tools. When I talk identity, I'm looking at my tool set, and I've got 10 to 15. Well, why is this happening here, right? And then I got a staff of 5. So that's not going to work well. And that's another conversation I had 2 hours ago. I was like, wait, what do we do with this? And so I think for me, it's just competition is good, right? Within any market, you need that. But I think, too, it's for identity, for one, there's so many different ways to skin the cat, make your meal, however you want to do it, right? But the problem is that it also takes time to do it right and to really get it in place. And I think one of the things that is a struggle is leadership and the business understanding that, right? That when it comes to identity, it's not a rip and replace. Because that, again, being that it is so centric to your day to day, that I'm just not going to rip out my soul solution and put a new one in tomorrow, and everything is just going to be connected and working and you're good to go. And that's real because I'm dealing with it right now. Right. So for me, it's so many disparate solutions that don't talk well together at times. And it also takes time to get them in correctly. And the ability to customize is not always a great thing either, in my opinion.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like you said, you've got 5 people or whatever to manage that. It means your budget's wildly disproportionate too, probably, right? Those tools aren't cheap. And so that just to operate, to actually take full value for the features of those tools. So you just, it's too hard to ever get to a point where you're getting all that value. Would you say that that the tools for the most part are able to do what you need them to do and it's more of a time thing? Or is it, are you seeing some of the tools just can't meet the needs of what you want, or the business can't change to meet what the tools are able to do?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, for me, I'm pretty hard pressed on making sure when we buy something, we use it right. We use it to its full capability. It seems like vendors are really kind of, the competitive landscape is key, right? Where they might be behind this quarter, but next year they're right back together and they're even, right? Because, well, as we all know, the engineer from here just jumped over to there. Now he's building that up because the movement within that market is crazy. And I see a tenth of it at most on that end. And so I think the capabilities are there within the tools. To me, it's more around the business supporting all the changes and the constant upkeep you have to have when it comes to tech, right? And realizing that from our side, the threats continue to change. They're not, we can't keep up. The budget on that side is bigger than what we have here. It's not, you don't just slap something in and say 5 years later, let's look at it again, right? It's the care and feeding is key. And I press on that pretty hard in my team, not only the care and feeding on the operational side, but you also need to build that relationship with these vendors, right? And you'll find some good ones out there that really want to partner with you, right? I mean, I'm at an organization that has a pretty cool logo. So I'll be honest, I probably have it easier than others where somebody just wants to put me on their marketing sheet. But again, I enjoy those conversations. I enjoy the ability to get in a room and talk through some things, roadmap it out, be a little transparent on where we're going, but then also be honest with them saying, hey, the struggle is that I don't have a limited budget and my budget's planned. My fiscal year ends in October. My budget was planned in August. You're calling me in July. Well, I'm sorry. Or midsummer. I can't just buy something for $250K. I'm not prepared for that. Okay, give me a couple months to figure it out. Let me assess the tool. Let me see if it works. And then I'll let you know if it makes it through our annual planning. And then again, timing, because resources are hard to come by and you can't throw everything in at once. So to me, it's the challenge is there's just so many options out there. They don't all fit together. Timing is key of when you can bring them in. And then really finding those right vendors and external partners to help you get it in and partner with you to really grow it, right? And taking your feedback and adjusting their tool to fit. Because I can't imagine, I'm not that smart to where I'm the only one thinking about a new feature that should be in place. There's others doing it as well.
So it's also, these tools don't just get deployed overnight. And I know like a lot of C-suite, that's not a CISO, think about security tools often as plug and play, right? It's a network firewall system and maybe expensive, but like you get some return pretty quick. Where in reality, it's like putting in an ERP system, not quite that massive, right? But it's more, it touches lots of things. Mm-hmm. It can't be done by itself. So do you run into issues where you talk to peers about identity tools and they're like, hey, we spent $1 million or X, right? When do I get the value for that? Do you run into that a lot?
I do. I mean, I've lived it, right? I'm not going to say the tool, but in a sense, I've gone through that to where it's like, wait a second, this thing's going to take me a year to get in, or actually 18 months was the norm for it to be put in place. And I'm halfway through my contract at that point, which then you're kind of forced to say, well, I'm not going to go anywhere else in a year and a half because I just spent a year and a half putting it in. It's that cycle because then I'm going to do another 3 years because I get my best pricing and in I put the investment in there. And so sometimes you're put in a hard spot because of that, in my opinion. But yeah, I've had as recent as a couple of weeks ago, I had a 2-day session with some leadership and it got into where at times I was getting a little bit of blank stares on like, wait, why isn't this done? It's either done or not done. I'm like, well, no, there's an in-between here. And it's normal. There's always going to be something here, right, in the mix. Otherwise, we're not progressing. And honestly, again, there's probably something not right if you can just turn it on and turn it off that quickly. And so for me, there is a misconception of the effort. And when it comes to, and you mentioned ERP, right? So the SAPs of the world and all that, and working for a public company where identity really comes into play, and I think it's underappreciated, is the necessary controls and I would say structure you have when it comes to supporting your ERP system, because you will get dinged and you will get an auditor at you if your IT general controls are not in place and you don't have the right user access, aggregation of duties, all that. So I think identity is so focused on like getting somebody onboarded, offboarded, being able to move around quickly, which is ideal. But then you shift it to the lovely world of compliance, and that is a very taxing effort if you don't have the right tools and people and processes in place that can really stop you from growing the other side of the business, in my opinion.
Well, Nate, I assume it's the same for you, but like it feels like those teams are also underwater, like not just to managing like an SAP, right? Like constant module changes and upgrades, you got to be doing enhancements to the platform. How do you get them to have time to work on the identity pieces? Like they're trying to run the business.
You don't, outside of just saying, and this is what I've learned over time in my career. I sat in a position once where I was designing data centers and I had like 20 sites I had to do, right? And then I had he was my old boss, was now a peer, was doing 4 sites. I'm like, wait a second, this doesn't seem right. And he knocked it out of the park, right? Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, he was documentation heavy and I was just scrambling on my end. And so that's, again, a lesson learned on what not to do, to where I'm really trying to say, okay, I know we have 25 things going on, but these 3 are necessary. And one of them is SAP security, in a sense, right? So if we're going to do something almost damn near perfect, it needs to be that, because the repercussions of not, they impact all this. And if you get dinged over here, you're not going to be able to focus over there anyways, because you're just doing all remediation work. So I think it's really right, making sure you put the eyes and the effort into the right areas where people can succeed, and then just plan out the rest. And unfortunately, you got to work with the business on that. But it is tough because it's hard. I don't have a limited budget to hire a staff to focus on SAP and then the rest of identity.
Yeah, you heard it on our last podcast, but I'm really hoping we can get more of these platforms like SAP to be more identity focused as a vendor. The platforms do it, so that way when it is your turn to integrate, it's a little simpler. And for those teams to do it too. I mean, there's SAP GRC, but that doesn't help you with the whole enterprise. So,
yeah, I mean, that's been a struggle, is the integration between like large partners, right? These ones that are semi-monopolies in what they do. And it gets even outside of identity, trying to even work through. I'm heavy on privacy and trying to,
sure,
hey, can you sign my data processing agreement? Or, I don't even look at yours. We're too big. We don't worry about you. You got to sign ours, but we won't change it at all for you, because, you know, you're here and we're way the heck up here. And like, okay, I guess we'll allow you to use our data to run AI, because I don't have a choice.
Yeah, so it feels like you lose on all aspects, except maybe you get to use the tool, but like you don't have another option. There's not another tool in the space to use.
No, not for a couple of them. There's not. Nope.
No.
Cool. So we talked about kind of how you influence people. We talked about how you influence culture, both from a technical and a human side. We talked about the current state of identity. What about the future state? Where do you see it's going, and where would you like to see it go?
So future state of identity, it's an interesting one, because I think we've all talked like zero trust, right? And that's been a term for 10 years, at least in my opinion. I'm probably potentially wrong on that, but it's easier said than done. I think it goes back to the maturity of the organization. When I, coming from more of a, I would say, incident response SOC background and just detect, protect, and all that, I really hope, and it's starting to get there, is where it's just more identity security, in a sense of utilizing better detection and response tools to really kind of see what is going on with that individual and that asset that they're utilizing. Because the amount of data that you're seeing throughout that comes from an identity, from where they're at, what they're doing, what they have access to, is huge. And something that'll allow them to tell that story. And I think it's out there. I mean, I remember the UEBAs, right, back in the day was a big thing. You don't hear that term much anymore at all. But from our eyes, when we look at, like, what drives us nuts and what keeps us busy is managing the credentials, right? From phishing to exposure of those credentials on the dark web to even when it comes to the quantity of them when you get hit by your cyber insurance provider and they say, why do you have so many DA or SA accounts, right? Or how many service accounts do you have? Why is that? To be is kind of going back to your question is just aligning it with the integration of more around that detection and response piece. But I also see it kind of just being able to be more around that continuous risk, right? We all live in a world of risk, even if we don't realize it. Every, probably 50% of the decisions you make are risk-based decisions, even on a daily basis. You're just not realizing it's risk, because risk is a very broad term, in my opinion. But it's just as people move to different locations, as they make a decision within a tool, evaluating that risk. And I think identity is going to be a big piece in that. On should they be allowed to do that or should they not be?
Makes sense. Yeah. We're seeing a bunch of trends in the industry and we kind of have our ideas of where things should go as well. One of the biggest trends we're seeing is vendor consolidation. And vendors are adding entire platforms to their programs so that they can sell the entire identity portfolio. We think that's good in general. I like seeing that. You know, it simplifies things. However, there's a lot of back and forth, like you said, like identity industry is incestuous, for lack of a better term, right? There's a lot of movement at the organizational levels and we're seeing those trends. Do you see an impact in that with what you're doing? Is there a benefit to you as a customer and a consumer?
There is. I mean, so when it comes to just vendor consolidation, I agree it's a positive, right, for the most part. As we are looking, where I'm currently at is to expand in a sense of, well, in a sense, consolidate, then just more streamline our identity program. A lot of the conversations we're having is like, wait a second, we've got this tool here that we're only using it for audit purposes. But now they're telling me they can do these 10 other things. The one includes PAM, right? Just-in-time access. That's great. Okay. It's not a cyber arc, but it doesn't need to be a cyber arc. Right? Because I already have it. I trust it. It's easy to flip that switch and turn it on. Right? And it's easy. It's really easy to test it because it's probably already there. I'm just not paying for it. And I just need to say, hey, give me a month and we'll go. So when I came into the organization, we were heavy on point solutions and I was able to reduce that by like 25% and go more platform. Right? And we're continuing to go that route because my staff was reduced. So I had to be more efficient and say, if you're going to learn tool, let's use Microsoft, right? If we go to Defender, well, let's add in Purview. Let's do Microsoft for identity on that side, utilizing conditional access and PIM, which are valued capabilities if you do it right. But the same thing goes with other vendors. And it's kind of neat to see because they may have come in as a PAM solution and now all of a sudden they're doing IGA. Okay, well, I guess I like them. I have that trust. I might as well, you know, when they did good on the PAM side, let's see how well they can do here on that end. So, and it's competition, which is key.
I heard a couple buzzwords in there, Corey. Do you have a favorite or a least favorite identity-related buzzword? I know Aaron and I do.
I'd almost like to hear your guys' favorite buzzword. I'm struggling on that one. I'm actually kind of embarrassed I had a buzzword in there. I'm not usually that guy that does buzzwords.
You said zero trust. I don't know if that qualifies for a buzzword or not.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest one. To me, zero trust is, and I kind of laugh at it in a sense because a lot of organizations where I've been, you ask like, what is zero trust? And you never get alignment on what that means, right? So And it all depends on who you're talking to, you know, then I got to help define it for the organization. But I always, back when it was coming out, I remember leadership was like, zero trust, you got to do it. Do you even know what you're, you know, really asking for here? Like we kind of are already, we're working towards it, right? And it's again, like Aaron was saying, it's not a quick little thing to put in place. It's multiple pieces to a puzzle that you have to work towards. And to me, it gets back into, does it make sense to even do for the organization? AI is the same thing, right? AI is great, but maybe it's not worth the investment today.
That's my least favorite buzzword is AI. Because every manufacturer, every vendor, it's like, hey, we're identity driven with AI and we're AI first. And when you dig it back, just like you said, zero trust, they're all different and they're all different forms of AI. And we assume AI is one thing, but there's not common ground there. And so I like to dig into those with our vendors to make sure it's true AI and there's true AI value in what's happening there. What's yours, Aaron?
I kind of stuck on a story somebody was telling me the other day in my head when you asked, and that was, you brought up zero trust. Like a good buzzword always has like an acronym, like AI or, but like zero trust doesn't, like people don't just say ZT. So somebody was like, well, it's just a zit. Once you pop your network security, it cleans everything up.
Yeah, definitely. Keep that one.
I love that. Well, guys, we're coming up on our time. We covered a lot. I feel like we could dig in a podcast on a couple of these topics alone. So thank you, Corey, for kind of high level walking us through the human side and the technical side and the program and product side of everything that you do. And so we believe that the very best CISOs focus on these things. And I love hearing your background and history and stories, because I think there's a lot of CISOs out there and a lot of identity and technical leaders that could learn from this. So thank you for your time. And we appreciate you coming on our podcast and wish you all the best.
Thank you as well. This has been great. And I appreciate the partnership.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of Authenticate This, the Cybersecurity Leadership Podcast. Check out the show notes for links and resources mentioned in today's shows. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes.